Yeah, I think there are two things going on, and the president is absolutely right to be frustrated and concerned about the way the courts are handling this. First, there's a pattern whereby these district court judges are trying to usurp the responsibility of the president in the national security area. The Constitution gives the president the power to make the judgments about how we deal with foreign nationals when we are animated by national security concerns. It's his call, not a district court judge's call. The second phenomenon that's occurring is even where it's appropriate for the court to play its traditional role of safeguarding the liberties of American citizens, we have this phenomenon of nationwide injunctions where the lowest level judge, district judges, try to bind the entire nation and bind the president in their initial decision. And that is not what we have meant by the judicial power under our Constitution. And it leads to a lot of instability in government and a lot of instability within the court system. It's something the court has to deal with. The Chief Justice has to deal mm-hmm. with the problem of nationwide injunctions.
Welcome to Worldview Matters, discussing controversial issues, discerning current events, defending biblical Christianity. No topic off limits. And now, here's your host, David Fiorazzo.
So friends, obviously you heard that clip, and today we're going to be talking about Democrat activist judges throwing wrenches at the Trump administration policies and what we would consider progress and things that he was elected to do. Huge problem in America right now. And I've got someone that's going to give us some solutions and how he sees it as a former lawyer, attorney, Mr. John Haller of Fellowship Bible Chapel. Look up his updates on YouTube, Fellowship Bible Chapel. Great, great prophecy updates there and a lot of great information and even an occasional roundtable with experts on his program. So, John, thank you so much for your time today. Let's dive right in. So many people, first of all, hello, good to see you again.
Hi.
So many people are frustrated about this, and I won't say people on the left, but people that elected Trump to do certain things, he's trying to implement certain policies and do certain things, and another judge throws an injunction, we call it a wrench, into the works. So help us understand how they get away with doing this.
Well, I would just build on the clip that you played from former Attorney General Bill Barr, who I think is back in private practice in D.C. now. And he's exactly correct. But I would build on it a little bit and say that we really are in the midst of a constitutional crisis in the United States. I mean, we've thrown that term around a lot over the last 8, 10, 12 years since Trump first started running for president and taking office and lawfare and the things that were done. And we need to understand that on the left, they will use every tool in their toolkit to slow down their opposition, in this case, the Republicans and President Trump. So one of the things that they're doing now is they claim that Trump is exceeding his presidential authority, and they're running into court to get an injunction. And as Bill Barr noted elsewhere in that clip, that the judges are entering these nationwide injunctions. And I think before Trump came into office the first time, there had been maybe a dozen nationwide injunctions issued by all the federal courts in the history of the United States of America, the Republic. Now, since Trump's been in office, there have been a few dozen, I believe. So the courts are out of control. The courts are all overstepping. And I've said this many times before. The one thing that you as a person, as an individual, should fear is a rogue prosecutor and a rogue judge, because they can make your life miserable. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, the money that you would spend on legal fees to defend yourself, just like the guys did in these J6 cases or the people did in the abortion clinic where they prayed outside of abortion clinics, essentially it bankrupts you pretty quickly, because lawyers don't work for free. And you're not the kind of person who would qualify for a public defender. The rules on that are pretty strict. So essentially, everything that you ever save or given will be put away. So then they go into court and they ask a federal judge sitting in usually Washington, D.C., or they may judge shop someplace else to find a case. Actually, they may file cases in a number of different jurisdictions and try to find the judge that they want. And, you know, the judges are selected randomly. So when I see this Boasberg character in the District of Columbia federal court getting two of the most important cases here recently, I scratch my head as a lawyer because I practice in federal court for over 40 years. I don't know how you do that. I don't know the odds. I mean, if you're going to be able to get him as a judge in, because he's ideologically aligned with you, then you ought to be buying lottery tickets for everybody in your neighborhood because you're going to win. So there are a couple solutions that we have here. One is that the Supreme Court could take up one of these cases on an emergency basis and put it into it. And when you look back in the recent history of the Supreme Court, even Justice Elena Kagan, who is a radical leftist,
yep,
said that some of the things that the judges were doing in terms of these broad injunctions to cover the whole country was completely out of line. And so, listen, I put everything right now on the lap of John Roberts. He needs to step up to the plate and be a man and stop this namby-pamby stuff that he's been doing ever since he became Chief Justice. It's pathetic. Or he needs to resign and let President Trump appoint somebody else as Chief Justice, like Justice Gorsuch, would be a great choice right now, just because he'll be around longer. And so I think if the court ever decided it, and Amy Coney Barrett grew a spine in the meantime, the Republican side of this, they would shut these things down. That's number one. The Supreme Court could take a case. The other thing is also in the lap of the Supreme Court. They could amend the federal rules of civil procedure to not allow these nationwide injunctions. It is ludicrous to me that they can do this, because you can file very similar cases on very similar facts in the same federal court, in the same federal courthouse, in a particular city and district in the United States. One judge will decide it one way and the other judge will decide it another way. It is ridiculous that a judge can put in place a nationwide injunction. I think there are probably a few limited circumstances for that, but it'd be very simple. All they have to do is amend Rule 65 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, which is the governing rule in federal court, to say that, you know, there's standards there as to what you have to show to get a temporary restraining order, which expires after a maximum of a couple weeks, maybe 28 days, if it's extended. And then you have to have another hearing to get a permanent injunction, preliminary or permanent injunction. So they could amend those rules and those standards and say, okay, in the case of a nationwide injunction, the moving party must establish this. And then the other thing they can do, a little known rule, part of the Rule 65, is that when you get an injunction against anybody, you have to come in and put up a security bond in the event that the injunction is found to have been improperly granted and the other party will sustain damages. You have to put up a bond, which can be pretty expensive. Well, it should be expensive.
Yeah.
But the courts rarely enforce that. So a lot of times they'll say, oh, just do a $5,000 security bond, which almost anybody can get pretty quickly. But if they said you need to put up $1 million or $2 million bond to get this injunction, a lot of these injunctions would go away. I mean, yeah. Some of these are NGOs that are bringing these cases, and they don't have the money to do this. And certainly, by the way, good news we just had in the past week or so, Greenpeace had made some libelous statements about some oil and gas and pipeline companies up in North Dakota. They were sued and a North Dakota jury came back and said that Greenpeace owed these people $667 million.
Wow.
That probably will bankrupt Greenpeace.
Well, yeah, so there is good news. So
there is.
I want to point to something, and Jeff, I'm not sure if you can pull this up, but while he was talking at the beginning, Bill Barr, there was a graph there with the yellow block showing how many of these injunctions for each president. And I think during the Obama administration, there were 12. Trump's first term, there were 64. And already in his second term, there are 15, have been 15 of these injunctions. So my question just got answered, John, but I just want you to respond to that. I was going to say, well, does the same thing happen when there's a Democrat in the White House? Well, very rarely. Not even as much. Look at that. Obama 12, Trump 64. Injunctions against him in his first term. So, yes, this is obviously not a fair game that they're playing. And I hate to call it a game. What are your thoughts?
Well, look, I think this shows activism on the part of the judges. This is bad.
Yeah.
Bad legal training. So, I mean, look at the one on the left side of that chart. It shows Bush at like four or five or something like that.
Six.
Okay, six.
Yeah.
And so, and I'm sure if you went back further in history, you would find almost none. It's something that's happened with activist judges over the last 25 years. And now it's completely out of control. And the judges are very ideological driven. They have lifetime appointments. Another thing that could be, and this is where the House of Representatives could step in. They could step in and limit the court's jurisdiction to even hear these type of cases. And a lot of people say, oh, you're denying people access to the courts. Listen, I actually got the high score in civil procedure at my law school my first year. So I paid very close attention. And one of the first things you learn is that Congress can control the scope of authority of the courts. That's the way the Constitution is set up. So, for example, if you want to sue somebody from another state in federal court, you can do that. Now, when I started law school, I think you had to have $25,000 in controversy. It's been raised to $75,000. But the court could completely do away with what's called diversity jurisdiction. Just like the Congress could put in place laws that would restrict the ability of the courts to give these broad injunctions. They could just limit the jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. You can't do this.
I want to go back before we have to just take a very brief pause. We're with John Haller, friends. That's why I wanted to get his perspective on this. And very helpful, by the way, because most of us don't understand lawyer speak or what you've been trained in. And now they're training to be activists. But back in 1820, this just came up when I was looking at this topic before the podcast. In a letter to militia officer William Jarvis, Thomas Jefferson wrote, "You seem to consider the judges as the ultimate arbiters of all constitutional questions, a very dangerous doctrine indeed, and one which would place us under the despotism of an oligarchy. Their power, meaning the judges, is the more dangerous, as they are in office for life," in other words, lifetime appointments, "and not responsible, as the other functionaries are, to the elective control," end quote. So, again, you go back to our founders, and they must have known something about this potential danger, too. I mean, this is Jefferson, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this has been a controversy around for a long time. And it was an early case that Chief Justice Marshall's court said that the court could weigh in on the constitutionality of enactments. I mean, that was not presumed to be even a possibility by some of the early founders. They were kind of shocked when that case happened. Hmm. And so it's just grown over the last couple hundred years until the point now where we have activist judges that are very ideologically driven. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that it is it is very much the case, and these judges wield enormous power. I had a judge call me up one time and said we'd had a pretrial or a status conference after I filed a case. The judge didn't like it, and he called me up and he said, "Mr. Haller, in that conference, I was telling you, you need to dismiss this case immediately. This is a federal judge. And I'm telling you, my heart was beating out of my chest. He called me alone. Nobody else was in the room.
Wow.
And he said, if you don't dismiss that case, you will lose this case in my court. And you can go ahead and appeal it. And I doubt that you'll win on appeal. So you decide what you want to do. I mean, it was very clear he was sending me a message. So judges are not above strong arming you that yep. way. Sometimes they're a little bit more subtle. That was probably the most direct one I had in 45 years of practicing law.
Well, it's getting frustrating now when it affects an entire presidency and administration that was elected to do certain things by the majority, by the will of the people. So, friends, we're talking about judicial tyranny and dark days in America if we don't get this reversed and find more solutions here. We're with John Haller, and we'll be right back on Worldview Matters.
Introducing Patriot Mobile, the wireless carrier that stands with you. We are committed to supporting the values that make our nation great. With affordable plans and reliable nationwide coverage, Patriot Mobile is not just a wireless service. It's a call to action for those who believe in the American dream.
Get free activation now with promo code David. So back with John Haller. Where do we go from here, John? Assuming, let's just say John Roberts doesn't take up or doesn't take the case or nothing. They don't intervene. What's going to happen? What do you see happening? And then we'll go on to another topic.
I think Boasberg right now seems to be the pivot point on a lot of this. Although there are other leftist activist judges in the District of Columbia district that are ideologically aligned with him. Mm-hmm. I think he's setting it up to hold members of the Trump administration in contempt. And if they're held in contempt, he can throw them in jail. And I would not put it past him to try to hold President Trump in contempt. But understand, for example, with regard to the deportation of these terrorists from Venezuela, that issue is pretty much committed to the executive branch. And this is part of the problem with like a lot of things that are going on in the Trump administration, that the executive branch is to implement the laws. It's to implement the laws and spend the money. And so it's a check and a balance. So it's a check on unrestricted spending by Congress. You know, the executive is not required to spend money on improper purposes or spend money for fraud. And so that's what I would agree with what, you know, Elon Musk and Doge are doing in the government right now is rooting out that waste and fraud because it's been abused. It's been abused for a long time. And I'm going to say, I think I've contended this for a long time. Remember the multi-billion-dollar settlements that the banks paid to the federal government back after the 2008 financial crisis?
Yes.
And the mortgage-backed securities and that type of thing.
Yep.
Where did all that money go? I think there's good evidence. Some reporters have dug this out, that money was laundered through a series of LLCs and NGOs and ended up in the hands of left-wing organizations. We're sort of seeing that with USAID, that these left-wing organizations have been getting millions and millions, even billions of dollars to spend on political things. And this judicial activism, by the way, I think it relates to Bible prophecy, because what did Jesus tell his disciples? You're going to be brought before magistrates and judges in the end. And I think that that's an indication of what the end time is going to be like. We're seeing this happening in two other countries, particularly right now. Well, Brazil is now going to put on trial Bolsonaro, a Christian guy who lost to this radical left-wing leftist named Luna or whatever his name is. He's insane. He's put back in place on the Supreme. No, he shouldn't have been able to run for office, but he got his compatriots in on the Supreme Court, and they overturned the law that kept him from running from office. Now they're going after Bolsonaro, and they're trying to put him in jail. This is what they wanted to do with Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And then you see the same thing going on in Israel, which I think is very prophetically significant. And there the Supreme Court has essentially become, made itself the supreme branch of government. They have an attorney general who won't represent the government in court. That it represents mostly the interest of these radical left-wing judges who've been able to point themselves to virtually every position on the Israeli Supreme Court.
Wow.
And it's out of control. So Israel itself is right now in the midst of a, I would call it a rather massive constitutional crisis, in the middle of a war that it, you know, a war that threatens, is an existential crisis for Israel. Mm-hmm. It threatens the existence of Israel.
Yeah, that's not an exaggeration of what's going on right now. It's volatile. Volatile might be even too soft of a word.
And by the way, that's happening in Israel. I interviewed a friend of mine, Danny Seaman. He's with, he just started a new podcast with JNS, Jewish News Syndicate. I think he premiered last night, his podcast, but we've talked about this quite a bit, and they are trying to get rid of Netanyahu. They could get rid of Netanyahu. It's called an election, and they could vote him out of office.
Yeah.
But in the midst of all this, with regard to the threats that Israel faces from Hamas and from the Houthis and Iran and Hezbollah, and also the terror groups that predominate, I think to a large extent, in the area improperly called the West Bank. It's actually biblical Judea and Samaria.
Thank you.
That is all an existential crisis. Israel's fighting that. They're reinstituting the war in Gaza. And I think that they just need to go in. I don't know how, I say this and people say, oh, you're not a very good Christian. Listen, you know, this is geopolitics. And sometimes in a war, you have to annihilate or humiliate or both your enemy to prevent other people from doing to you what that country did.
Yeah.
So Israel's, I think, got the right approach with Gaza. Those people are going to be made to leave. I think Israel's, you're going to see Israel in the near term annex Gaza. There's also rumors that they're going to annex Judea and Samaria, put it under Israeli sovereignty, just like they put the Golan Heights under Israeli sovereignty during the prior the first Trump administration. So I think you're going to see that. And listen, this is not this is something, you know, somebody asked me, well, how long does this last? And I said, so I will tell you how long it lasts when you tell me the day the Lord returns to set up his kingdom, because I don't see that it's going to be walked back. And I'm not scared. Okay. But I think we need to be situationally aware about things that are going on. Mm-hmm. By the way, just recently, a parliament, and you've not really heard this in the press outside of a few areas. I think the Daily Telegraph may have mentioned it in an article, but it was just released for publication, a 315-page report by a parliamentary committee of the United Kingdom's parliament. Lord Roberts, I think it's Anthony Roberts, he's a great historian. I wrote a great book on history of the English. Well, he continued on Churchill's history of the English-speaking peoples until 1901. Roberts updated it to the present day. It is a very comprehensive report about what happened on October 7th. And I think people need to find that report, download it, at least look at it, or get AI to do a summary of it for you. It's incredibly well done. It's not getting any press, but people need to understand, with the infiltration of Islamic migration in Europe, and it's getting very bad in the UK and France and Germany, and in the United States, the concern is that what happened on October 7th in Israel is the plan to happen in multiple countries around the world, including the United States. So I would just caution people, when you go out, pay attention to what's going on. You need to be situationally aware. That's aware. That's not to be scared.
Right.
Little tiny Israel is dealing with this problem. They had these tremendous military victories and operations, the pagers, the taking out of the whole Hezbollah leadership. And by the way, in Israel, 80 to 85% of the population support what they're doing. You would not know that by listening to the news.
Yeah, there's a parallel to America, too, that the majority of Americans still support the policies and what the president is trying to do. But you would never know that from the media, the leftist media in America.
So I think what we need to watch over the near term, but I know this airs a little bit into the future, but something's going to happen with Iran, I think, in the near term. My understanding is that about a third of the U.S. B-2 bombers, the big, you know, stealth-type bombers, are now in Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean. That's about a third of all the bombers that we own. They've been pouring massive numbers of bombs, highly lethal bombs, into Israel. And I think you're going to probably see an attack on Iranian nuclear facilities. It's interesting, David. Just in the last few days, Iran released another video of this massive underground missile facility. And when I see this, I think, what was the old saying, the song we used to sing at church camp? It only takes a spark to get a fire going. And I'm just thinking, like, you know, they dropped this massive number of bombs on one spot in Beirut. And Nasrallah was in a bunker 150 feet below ground. Now, the explosions didn't kill him, but it sucked all of the oxygen out and he asphyxiated. And I'm just saying is we have more sophisticated bombs. The U.S. And I think that all they got to do is they got to penetrate that underground missile base in one spot and the whole thing is going to blow. It'll be an explosion like a few that we have ever seen in human history. And so I'm expecting that to happen, but I don't think it'll happen before the end of the Islamic holiday of Ramadan. We just had this controversy about the signal chat and plans that were supposedly linked about, you know, bombing the Houthis. I think that guy got added by somebody. It was added by a particular guy at the CIA, and his wife is very much aligned with the left. And so I'm just saying, I don't know if the guy did it on purpose. I don't know if it was by accident. But I also say, I don't think that detailed battle plans were released. By the way, my idea of how you deal with the Houthis is get a plane, put bomb on plane, fly plane to Yemen, and drop it.
On autopilot. You know? Hey, John, we ran out of time already. We're going to have to talk about geopolitics and Israel more next time. But thanks, brother. God bless. Friends, thank you so much for sharing the podcast. God bless you. And as always, keep speaking the truth about things that matter.